So we're going to be joining Narada Muni and Krishna, where Narada, in service to Krishna, is inspiring Krishna to go to Mathura in a very diplomatic way. He doesn't say, okay, time's up. He doesn't say, what are you doing? Go to Mathura. He just says in the following manner. So this is 10:37, verses 10 and 11. Narada calls out Krishna's name twice. Krishna, Krishna! Out of great bliss, while thinking himself as just a semblance of a devotee who praises the Lord by the Sankirtan of his names, Narada said, no one can measure or understand your mind. Atma manaha. Therefore, who can ascertain what's on your mind, whether you intend to remain in Vraja, giving joy to your parents and the other Vrijbasis, or whether you will go to Mathura. As the controller of Yogamaya, Yogesha, you can easily stay in both places without difficulty. Pretty cool. And that's exactly what he did. Krishna left and Krishna stayed. And he stayed by remaining in his uppercut form within the hearts of the Vrijbasis, and he left. And as the master of the universe, Jagat Ishvara, you must kill the demons who burden the earth. Now, he's not saying all those things. He's glorifying Krishna. But unpacking the glorification of Krishna is, here's what he's saying. Time to go to Mathura, Jagat Ishvara, to kill the demons who burden the earth. You are famous as the son of Nanda, but now you should become known as the son of Vasudeva, or Vasudeva, thus generating his good fortune, Vasudeva's good fortune. Therefore, come, live in Mathura, and relieve all your devotees from their fear of Kamsa. You are the best Pravara, fulfiller of desires, and the best among the Yadus, Satvatam. Thus, O Master Prabhu, you can do anything. And we heard this yesterday. Krishna replies, I act according to my desires, so why are you making a request from me? Narada answered, you are the super soul within me, Tvam Atma, who gave me the inspiration to request you, so what can I do? You dwell not only in my heart, but within the hearts of all living beings, Sarvabhutanam. You remain hidden, just like fire within wood. Just as you rest in the caves of Govardhan, as Nanda's son, you rest within the heart as the Supersoul. Though you are resting in the heart, you are the witness, Shakshi, of everything. Thus, you are the greatest person, Mahapurusha, with the power to do anything. Generally, even great persons have someone above them with more power. But you alone are the supreme controller, Ishvara, of everything. One of the words that Prabhupada would use regularly to speak about this point, Krishna, he has no equal and has no superior. Sama is equal and asama, he has no equal. And urdhva means someone who's greater. So Krishna is asamurdhva. So I was always curious and I asked some devotees, where's that? Where do you find asamurdhva? And I couldn't find it and they didn't know. And just yesterday, somebody found it. And they remembered, etc. So it's not asamurdhva, it's asamurdhva. Asamurdhva. A-S-A-M-O. No. Asamurdhva. It's found in a couple places. One place is in Chaitanya Charitamrita where the statement is made where Krishna has four qualities that others don't have, even Vishnu Tattva, and that word asamurdhva is used there. And there is another place earlier in the Bhagavad, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, he's not only the controller of everyone, but no one controls him. That's the statement. Generally, even great persons have someone above them with more power, but you alone are the supreme controller of everyone. Asamurdhva. Jiva Goswami writes, Narada says, I have told Kamsa some facts because I know this will be an opportunity for your pastimes. By your mercy, I know the sequence of your pastimes and the truth about you. So he's in this place, this category of Dasya Bhav, knowing the majesty and everything of Krishna. And he, Narada, understands the very special position of the Vrijbasis. They don't have that sense of the majesty and opulence of Krishna. He regards them as superior, not because he knows things they don't know, he's superior. It's really nicely described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita when there's a conversation between, just before Gopakumar goes to Dwarka and then Mathura, they're in Dwarka. So Uddhava's there because he's in Dwarka. Uddhava and Narada and Gopakumar. And they're preparing him to go to Vrindavan. And Narada says to Uddhava, give him your mercy, because he's more qualified than both of us. He has this indomitable urge to be with Krishna in Braja, because he's from Braja. He's a cowherd boy. He has that mood, and he's more elevated than both of us. But you can give him some nice knowledge. Just be compassionate to him. So Narada is saying that about himself and Uddhava. Uddhava is praying to take birth as a blade of grass. Brahma is praying take birth as any form of life for the same reason. Some dust from the feet. Uddhava is specific about dust from the feet of the gopis, and Brahma is dust from the feet of any of the Vrijbasis. They're so elevated. But though this is just once again, Narada is saying to Krishna, by your mercy, I know the sequence of your pastimes and the truth about you. Narada explains this in 11 verses. He explains the nature of Krishna in 3 verses. In 2 verses, he addresses him. So this is one of those. He's addressing him. He calls his name first. to indicate that the form of Krishna is the root. Swarup Lakshana, and then the others are Tatastha Lakshana. Primary characteristic of Krishna is his form. He repeats the name for emphasis, and since Krishna is absorbed in his own sweet pastimes, he wants to make him attentive. Like, hey, Krishna, it's time to go to Mathura. Pay attention, please. He then makes clear how Krishna is the root by describing his inherent or swarup characteristics, plural. Because he is beyond all others and is infinite, he cannot be understood by anyone, aprameya, aprameyatmam. His form as Bhagavan surprises even himself. So that's his form is the primary, swarup lakshana, or inherent lakshana, characteristic. Then his tatastha characteristics are described. We're going to hear this in the next commentary, so pay attention and you'll hear it again. Your control by your yogamaya shakti, yogesha, which is your complete form, though its complete form is the Krishna is the swarup, and then with his shakti makes a complete form. But it's, the shakti is resting upon Shaktiman, so his form is Krishna's form. So Radha is the expansion of his Ladini shakti, Yogamaya is an expansion of his Yogamaya shakti, and Krishna is surrounded by so many shaktis. So there's his primary characteristic, and his complete form is complemented by his shaktis, starting with Yogamaya. Therefore, you are the Lord of all the spiritual and material worlds, Jagadishwara. So he who's the Lord of the spiritual world is the Lord of the material world also, because that's another part of his shaktis. So take note, I'm going to make mention of a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 5, verse 84. And that verse is the commentary of that verse is explaining Bhagavatam 1.3.1. So Bhagavatam 1.3.1, chapter 3 of Canto 1, is the incarnations of the Lord. And the incarnations of the Lord have potencies. So when we speak of incarnation of the Lord, we may not say, oh, and he also has potencies, but it's included. Like I think it's Jiva Goswami says in his commentary on the vision of Vyas, he did, you know, it's the verse that says he fixed himself in samadhi and then he saw apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha chad apashrayam. So he explains, but he saw purusham purnam. It means he saw Krishna's energies. And he gives the example. If you say, I saw the full moon last night, you don't say, oh, and by the way, I also saw the effulgence around the moon. It's implied. You see the full moon, you see the effulgence around the moon. So to say, Sakshat Purusham Purnam, he saw Radharani along with Krishna. And not only Radharani, but all the other features of Goloka, or Krishna Loka. He saw the whole shebang, Vyas. So in the same way, The response to the incarnations of the Lord includes the potencies of the Supreme Lord. So I'm going to read. Well, I'll mention it first. He, Prabhupada, refers to the commentary of Madhvacharya on this verse, 131 of the Bhagavatam. And in Madhvacharya's commentary on that verse, he mentions there's 16 spiritual energies present in the spiritual world, and Prabhupada lists them out. 16. I'm not going to, well, one of the 16 is Yogamaya. So this exercise is, what's the relationship between Radharani and Yogamaya? Because Radharani is the Ladini potency, Yogamaya is the Yogamaya potency. So what's the relation? Is there a relation? What is it? And it doesn't specify what that relation is, just simply says these 16 are spiritual potencies existing in the spiritual world, and one of them is Yogamaya. Sri, Bhul, Leela, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Gir, Pushti, Satya, Gyana, Gyana, etc. Vimala, Ishana, and Yogamaya is one of them. And continuing, in his commentary on Lagva Bhagavatamrita, Baladev's commentary says the 16 becomes a list of 9. And in the list of 9, there's some same and there's some different ones. It's a different list. But the same principle. They're spiritual potencies in the spiritual world. And yet another reference, Prabhupada's purport here, in Bhagavat Sandarbha of Srila Jiva Goswami, text 117, they are described as, and it doesn't give a number, but it's a longer list than both of those. And there's some additional names. And in Jiva Goswami's list, there's the Ladini Shakti, Sandini, Samvit, and Ladini Shaktis. Those are in the spiritual world. So Radharani is the Ladini Shakti that's part of the spiritual potency, we can say the internal potency, and Yogamaya is one of those potencies also in the spiritual world, part of Krishna's spiritual potencies or internal potencies. So they're separate entities personified. They're Shaktis of Krishna personified by different personalities, each one of these in the list. And that's the relation. I'm going through this because, you know, back to the text. The verses that we're looking at, 10, 37, 10 and 11, where Narada is speaking to Krishna, and he's doing this glorification of Krishna, starting with his Swarup Lakshana, then comes his Tatastha Lakshana. And the Tatastha Lakshana makes the form complete. Say it negatively. Without the potencies, the form is incomplete. Or the understanding of the form of Krishna is incomplete. Because the form of Krishna has potencies. And therefore the complete form includes his Yogamaya Shakti. Therefore, you are the Lord of all the material and spiritual world, because material and spiritual worlds are his potencies. And he's the Lord of his potencies. That's just taking this really simple verse where he's saying, describing Krishna in these terms. So our acharyas are taking those terms and fluffing it out so we can understand what he's saying. Paragraph. In all these places, that's the spiritual material, you are present because of your powers. Vasudeva. You are present because of your powers. Vasudeva. Here's a detail. In the process of creation, that the secondary creation, the one that Brahma does, when he's preparing the universe, he manifests the elements and the senses and the objects of the senses and the whole thing, and the demigods that are controllers of the senses, but nothing happens. So the demigods, because they're persons, they pray to the universal form, help. Nothing happens. And then each one of them, the senses and the controlling deities, they offer their prayers to the universal form, not in a non-existent imaginary universal form. It's temporary. And nothing happens and nothing happens. And then finally, Vasudev enters. And then it happens. It says specifically, the Virat Rupa rose. The universe, voila. And it started moving, because Vasudev is required for the demigods, for the senses, for the object of the senses, for matter, and the controllers of matter, to do anything. Vasudev, so that's back to this. In all these places, spiritual material, you are present because of your powers, Vasudev. And thus you are the shelter of everything. Akila Vasa. To make clear that all this refers to Krishna, he indicates his eternal position in past times with his devotees. You are the best among the devotees who are kshatriyas and cowherds. Satvatam pravara. The possessive case is used in Satvatam to indicate that he is one of them. It's like showing the abode of Krishna to Nanda Maharaj and the Brijbasis. Krishna shows he's there too. And he's being praised by the personified Vedas. He's present in the spiritual, he's present in the material realm. We just can't see him, but he's present. And he's one of us, but in the supreme position. He is, Krishna, is eternally present in past times with Satvatam, these devotees. And then he quotes Jiva Goswami, this is Vishwanath, quotes one of the last verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 90, verse 48. There's just 50 verses, and that ends Canto 10. Sukadev speaking. Krishna lives eternally among the cowherd men and Yadavas, and is conclusively both the son of Devaki and Yashoda. Shortly I'm going to read the translation from the BBT on that verse. This 10:90:48. And is conclusively both the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty and the cowherd men, and with his mighty arms, he kills everything inauspicious in Vraja, Mathura, and Dwaraka. By his presence, He destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert, and the suffering of separation of the inhabitants of Braja and Dwarka. His blissful smiling face always increases the desires of the gopis of Vrindavan and women of Mathura and Dwarka. He remains eternally in that situation. Paragraph. The cause of his eternal presence is stated in Narada's words. Oh, Master Prabhu, you are the master of time and other factors. Thus, by these names, Narada indicates Krishna's position as a form of unequaled powers, famous by names like Shyamasundar, as an associate of the Yadus and cowherds, and the performer of pastimes suitable to each of them. So that's a pretty colorful description of something that sounded pretty simple. He's just reciting Krishna's glories. But it's packed with other understandings. So here's Jiva Goswami repeating some of the same but some different points. You are the Paramatma of all beings. Garbhadakshe Vishnu and Shiradakshe Vishnu, sitting unseen within the cave of the heart, like the fire dormant within kindling wood, the witness. By calling his names, that's the Krishna Krishna, Narada has indicated Krishna's real position. Now he indicates his partial forms. Quote, Bhagavad Gita 10:42. But what is the use of knowing all these individual vibhutis, Arjuna? Please understand, by just one portion of myself, I am firmly established in this universe. 10:42 Bhagavad Gita. This is explained in two verses. Then he goes through the names. You are the soul of all moving and non-moving entities in the material world, Paramatma. This is described as, now he's going to make reference to Satvata Tantra. So the Satvata Tantra makes reference to three Purushas. So he chooses the third one first. That is, in his third form, he is situated in all beings. He is also Mahavishnu, Mahapurusha, mentioned in the verse, presiding over all creation, and Garbhadakshe Vishnu, the presiding deity of each universe, Ishwaraha. He's embedded within his glorification of Krishna is indirectly mentioning the three Purushas. So here's the Sanskrit. Ekam tu mahata srashtri dvitiyam tad anda sangstitam. That is, the first form is the great creator and the second form is situated in the universe, Satvata Tantra. Though you are everywhere, like fire in wood, you are situated by your portions in each entity within their hearts. Thus you can be quickly realized. So now, Sanatana Goswami, he repeats the name of Krishna because the tongue is naturally attracted by chanting the name, or he chants out of great devotion. The first utterance means Krishna, the form of the Supreme Brahman. And the second utterance means Krishna, who manifests unlimited qualities of Bhagavan. This is illustrated by the other words. Now he goes back, the Supreme Brahman, the first Krishna. The power of the form of the Supreme Brahman is illustrated in three verses. Manifestation of Bhagavan's qualities is expressed in nine verses. That's a total of 12. Because of great devotees like Vasudeva and Devaki being tied up in suffering and thinking himself a great offender, fearing the effects of great offense, Narada calls out to the Lord to forgive him for his offense. One should not say, I am the Supreme Brahman. Whose son are you? You should not say, I am the Lord of the universe, all jivas are my servants. What is your particular name? Though Krishna is the Supreme Brahman with form, you are Krishna, revealing unlimited qualities as Bhagavan. You depend on the bhakti of your parents and others in his lila. Otherwise, your revelation as Bhagavan is incomplete. So this is the Yogamaya message again, the exchanges of loving dealings between Krishna and his devotees. That's through the agency of Yogamaya, stimulating love and churning the pastimes, Yogamaya, otherwise incomplete. But he's not incomplete, he's always complete. Paragraph. Everything may be explained in terms of virodha alankara. So virodha means contradiction. So he's saying this, and then there's this. And then he's saying this, and then there's this. So that's the logic of virodha alankara. You with me? Virodha alankara. Though you are spread everywhere, aprameyatma, you are the son of Vasudeva. Vasudeva. Though you are atmarama, yogesha, still, you are the abode of full Shuddha Sattva, or you dwell in Devaki. O jewel in the womb of Devaki, he does not utter her name directly out of respect. Though you are the Lord of the universe, you are the Lord, Prabhu, of the best, Pravara, of the Yadus, such as Ugrasena. Or, O Supreme Pravara. Wait, but this seems contradictory. That is true. Though things appear impossible by our power, it is all easily accomplished, O Lord, full of inconceivable powers, Prabhu. This is your status as the Lord. It could be unpacked further, but it's kind of terse. But again, there's the primary and secondary Sarup Lakshana, Tatastha Lakshana. And the Tatastha Lakshana is fascinating, and it's Bhagavan. In his highest sense, Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna. So Narada is addressing like that. Narada goes on. I've told Kamsa some facts because I know this will be an opportunity for your pastimes. He repeats, by your mercy, I know the sequence of your pastimes and the truth about you. Narada explains this in 11 verses. He explains the nature of Krishna in 3 verses. In 2 verses, he addresses him. Paragraph. He calls his name first to indicate that the form of Krishna is the root that he uses, or the translators use this phrase, root, swaruplakshana, or essential. Those are terms. The form of Krishna is the root. He repeats the name for emphasis. And since Krishna is absorbed in his own sweet pastimes, he wants to make him attentive. He then makes clear how Krishna is the root by describing his inherent or swarup characteristics. Because he is beyond all others and is infinite, he cannot be understood by anyone, aprameyatmam. His form as Bhagavan surprises even himself. So that's the swarup. Then his tatastha characteristics are described. You control by your yogamaya shakti, yogesha, which is your complete form. Therefore, you are the Lord of all the material and spiritual worlds, Jagat Ishvara. In all these places, you are present because of your powers, Vasudeva, and thus you are the shelter of everything, Akila Vasa. To make clear that all this refers to Krishna, he indicates his eternal position in pastimes with his devotees. Primary, as opposed to secondary, with his devotees. You are the best among the devotees who are kshatriyas and cowherds, sattvatam pravara. Possessive case is used, sattvatam, to indicate that he is one of them. He is eternally present in pastimes with these devotees. And he again quotes 10.9.D.48. I'll read it again, and then I'll read the BBT translation. Krishna lives eternally among the cowherd men and the Yadavas, and is conclusively both the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty and the cowherd men, and with his mighty arms he kills everything inauspicious in Vraja, Mathura, and Dwarka. By his presence he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert, and the suffering of separation of the inhabitants of Vraja and Dwarka. His blissful, smiling face always increases the desires of the gopis of Vrindavan and women of Mathura and Dwarka. He remains eternally in this situation. So here's the BBT. Slightly different, but some important emphasis is there. Lord Krishna is he who is known as Jana Nivasa, or the ultimate resort of all living entities, and who is also known as Devaki Nandana and or Yashoda Nandana, the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms he kills everything inauspicious, as well as every man who is impious. By his presence, he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. His blissful smiling face always increases the lusty desires of the gopis of Vrindavan. May he be all glorious and happy. So that's Shukadev wrapping up the entire 10th canto. In the BBT purport, it just quotes Prabhupada's writing on this verse, found in Krishna book. And Prabhupada spends a great deal of time in the Krishna book on this word Jananivas. Prabhupada named one of his disciples, the celebrated devotee, Jananivas. But it's actually Jananivasa, that's the correct pronunciation. Jana Nivasa, he's the resort of all Janas, the shelter and protector. And there's another long section in the word for word. It doesn't mention Yasoda's name at all in the Sanskrit. Devaki Vara or something like that. And we heard several times Yashoda also had a second name. One of her second names was Devaki. So sometimes when the word Devaki is used, it means Yashoda. But, you know, there's an interesting back and forth on what is being referred to in the verse. And here, the Acharya's commentary says it's definitely both. He's the son of, definitely the son of both. And there it's, you know, Prabhupada didn't make a big deal about Krishna is also the son of Yashoda. It's mentioned in some portion of the first canto commentary, but it's just a mere mention. It's not emphasized at all in his teachings. But for our acharyas, it's a big deal. He is the son of both. And he can do that by his expansion. He can do anything. But even in the BBT commentary, because the acharyas speak about this, he's the son of both. Or he's the son of this one or the son of that one. So, but what's important is not that particular point. But what's important is he's eternally present with these devotees. So there's this prakat manifestation, and there's the uprakat manifestation, and he's eternally engaged with his eternal associates. Yashoda and Nanda, Vasudeva and Devaki, he's eternally associated with them and performing pastimes with them. And all the other eternal associates, giving bliss to them by his smiles and so forth. Continuing, the cause of his eternal presence is stated, "Oh, Master Prabhu, you are the master of time and other factors. Thus, by these names, Narada indicates Krishna's position as a form of unequal powers, famous by names like Shyamasundara, or as an associate of the Yadus and cowherds, and the performer of pastimes suitable to them." The picture is becoming really clear, isn't it? The non-contradiction is explained through an example. This is the last paragraph for the morning. You are the one Atma of all beings. As in Dvau Saparnau, the two birds in a tree, you are one within all jivas. You are many, but one as Paramatma, otherwise you could not be the Supreme Lord. This is clear in Vedanta. An example is given. Fire appears differently according to different types of wood, but no flame becomes visible without one original flame. Actually, one fire alone is situated in the various pieces of wood. Paramatma is like that. Though you are hidden from sight, you happily rest in a cave of Govardhan. Though you are art, the witness, without association, you are filled with great powers, as the form with 1,000 heads, Mahapurusha, or you are the Supreme Person who gives himself, who is controlled by the devotee. Thus, everything is possible. You are the Lord, Ishwaraha. By this conclusion, unlimited contradictions are easily resolved. There are contradictions. Apparent contradictions. But Krishna is the resolver or the resting place within which all contradictions are resolved and rest. Although he is one, he is many. Although he is very far away, he's very near as well, and all of that. By understanding the primary, then the secondary becomes easily resolved because it rests in the primary, the source of everything. And that form of Krishna is the source of everything. We can say Bhagavan, but even more specifically, the form, because Bhagavan includes his potencies, and within the potent are the potencies. It's very similar. This philosophical point is very similar to the pastime of the Brahma Vimohan Lila. There's Krishna, Brahma sees, and then there's all the cowherd boys and calves. And then there's all the forms of Narayan and all their various potencies, just like that verse that we read from Chaitanya Charitamrita with all the potencies, and he saw all the potencies. And when you read that chapter of what he saw, chapter 13 and what he saw, those potencies are listed again. That's another place. And they're in the spiritual realm. And the ones that are in this realm are the reflections of the one in the spiritual realm. So we don't say this is false. It's just temporary and a reflection of the spiritual realm. So there is a connection between all things and the source of emanation, including the material ones that are emanation from the source. They're just in a different category of energies. But he is complete with all of his energies, or say it negatively. He's incomplete. Although he's the rest of all his energies, he's incomplete without all of his energies. Or, as the impersonalists would have it, you can't have energies. Because if you have energies, then you have two. And, you know, there's this a priori assumption, there's only one. And so then Brahman has no potencies. So then what are the potencies? Well, they don't exist. Philosophical dismissal. It's the covering of Brahman. So, okay, but it's false. Where's the covering come from? Or the covering covers Brahman, then that means the covering is greater than Brahman. So how can you have something greater than Brahman? Well, it just doesn't exist. It just appears. I mean, it's like shell game, hocus pocus. It's not scriptural, nor is it even reasonable. But some people really buy into it, and they buy into it because they want to be God. And by mental speculation, this and that. In studying and preparing for Tattva Sandarbha, I read that because Shankaracharya made no commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, but made reference to it indirectly, that is, the certain set of prayers that refer to Krishna, that's pastimes of Krishna that are only in the Bhagavatam. They're not in any other literature, which means two things. He was familiar with Bhagavatam, but he chose not to comment on it. So his followers, knowing that he had an interest in the Bhagavatam, had an itching to make commentary on the Bhagavatam in an impersonal way. And the history says there was one such commentary, but it was lost, fortunately. So Sridhar Swami, knowing that the impersonalists have a liking for what Shankaracharya has a liking for, he made a commentary that wouldn't just repel them. So there are portions in his commentary that look impersonal, when the you know, vast majority of it is personal. It was a strategy. So when Jiva Goswami comments in Sandarbhas, he just says it very simply. I'll only make reference to those portions that are in keeping with Siddhanta. He doesn't get into a big thing about it, but, you know, commentary by Baladeva says it explicitly. Now, following this acharya that made his commentary that then got lost, there was another Shankara sannyasi that wrote an elaborate, I haven't read it, but I just, the historians say, very elaborate description of how Brahman has no potencies. You know, with just word jugglery, but really extensive. And, you know, speculators can just go on and on and on and on and on and on. Mostly when we hear speculation, we just like, okay. But, you know, they're really serious about their business, especially the scholarly ones, of proving that which makes no sense. The absolute must have no potencies. Then if there's something that he must not have, then he's less than complete. Anyway, so these things go on in scholarly circles, and our acharyas are quite aware that these things go on in scholarly circles, and therefore they're giving a foundation on verses of the Bhagavatam, which is the topmost pramana or evidence that the verses of the Bhagavatam are expounding on the personal feature, and not just personal feature as Bhagavan, but even more specifically the form. Because I suppose one could say, well, Brahman has potencies but no form or something. But so form is the Shaktiman, is Krishna's form, and then he has his Shaktis that are resting on him. Like the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine is resting on the sun. Brahmano hi pratishta aham. The impersonal is resting on the personal. And the person has form. So, you know, this is, in one sense, for us, it's not a big deal. In another sense, it's a big deal because we're in an atmosphere where it is a big deal. The Western world is filled with impersonalism and voidism. And just scratch the surface a little bit. Prabhupada was asked once, what's a Mayavadi? And Prabhupada's answer was, anyone who's a Hindu, scratch the surface a little bit and they're Mayavadi. even when they worshiping, multiple persons. What's behind that? It's not Krishna. It's not Bhagavan. It's impersonal. Resting upon impersonal. And so, it's important, these like very detailed explanations. At least we should know, in our heart of hearts, and with the fortified by the strength of scriptural references, very lucidly explained, a little involved, but lucidly explained, if we take the time and trouble, lucidly explained, that the personal feature, the form of Krishna, is the source of everything. Now, it's quite inconceivable and there's apparent contradiction in all of this. So we can just close our eyes and say, Haribo. Or we can keep our eyes open and try to understand. And that's trying to understand effort helps us become clear of who Krishna really is. Why is it that we're worshiping Krishna? Why is it that we're chanting his name? I mean, it can be very simple. We don't have to be super scholar. But if we want to be really clear ourselves, so we're not just blind following or something like that. Everything can be revealed simply through chanting of the holy name. That's a fact. Bhakti gives all knowledge and detachment. That's a fact. And as we advance in bhakti, then we're interested in hearing these details because it's just glorification of the person who we're worshiping and serving because he's so wonderful. I've been listening to, it's already 8:30. I've been listening to some classes in chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita, and probably those verses where Krishna's describing of intelligence, intelligence, the strength of the powerful man, the taste of water, the ability in man, the sound in ether, and the pranava. And so he said, supposing you're not really inclined to study scripture, you're maybe not even inclined to chant, but you can think of Krishna always because he's everywhere. Jagat avyaktamurtina, he's present everywhere. So that's a meditation on Krishna that's kind of like, he is within the universe, but then he warns that this isn't pantheism. The glass of water on my desk here is not God. That's pantheism. Or behind the water is the controlling deity, and then that's pantheism. There are two types of pantheism. There's many gods, that's pantheism. And nature is God, that's another pantheism. The mountain is God, the tree is God. Pantheism. God is nature. There's so many conceptions, and we're to some degree, because we're living, we're influenced by conceptions that are out there floating around. And the education process and the association process, it rubs off. And the sound of the Bhagavatam and the clarification of that sound of the Bhagavatam through our commentators gives us the truth about Krishna, Krishna Tattva. The essence of, let's say, this concluding statement, the essence of Krishna's pastimes, to relish them, is Krishna Tattva. So it's there in the verses, the potency is there in the verses, and the acharyas are drawing out that potency, the details, and then put it back together, you got the verse. And the potency is there just in the name. So all we need is the name or the verses of the Bhagavatam, then the commentary of our acharyas. And the picture becomes very clear. That's why we're worshipping Krishna. And that's the Krishna that we should be worshipping. Not some of these other misconception Krishnas. Okay, 8:35. See if there's any discussion. Yes?
Maharaj, we understand the gopis are pure devotees of the Lord. Right? So, at the same time, I'm trying to understand why the word lusty desires is being used for...
It's used in different ways. There's transcendental, and then there's material. The material is, I want to satisfy my senses. The spiritual is, I want to satisfy Krishna's senses.
The lusty desires is trying to satisfy Krishna's senses. Yeah.
The spiritual.
Spiritual.
No, it's not that the other than the gopis, they didn't have the desire to satisfy Krishna's senses. But it's in a conjugal mood, satisfy the senses of Krishna. Now, sometimes it's used in the other sense. By contact with Krishna, they became purified of their lusty desires. Sometimes it's spoken like that, as if they had some material contamination, which they don't have. But it's like all these nice verses of hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, the creepers, the trees, and the clouds, and the water, and ecstatic. So by contact with Krishna, symptoms of ecstasy, the symptoms of ecstatic lust. It's not the satisfaction, it's Krishna's satisfaction. But it looks like, Krishna smiles, Krishna's sidelong glances. So a worldly person who sees a member of the opposite sex smile at them, or glance at them, then something starts to happen. The material lust becomes invoked. But it's not material. That's the paradigm is different, and we are accustomed to looking at things and hearing things and understanding things through the material paradigm. And it takes a while to get it down. This is the perverted reflection of that, and that's pure. There's no contamination in their, quote, lust. Okay? Okay. There's one?
This is from Uttama Bhaktadasa. Since loving service to Lord Krishna is higher than any other destination, including Goloka, should a sadhana bhakta start meditating in that direction as the only destination and leave the rest to Lord?
Sure. But, keep your mind there, maybe a stretch, because we're conditioned. And we're sadhakas. And sadhakas are influenced by past conditioning. But if one can see that as the goal to aim for, sure. And allow the fact that there's going to be some fluctuation, unsteadiness. But strive for the steadiness towards that goal, sure.
This is from Shubhra Mataji.
She's asking, I have been meditating on the character of Narada.
The what?
On the character of Narada.
Oh, character of Narada, okay.
And how he is expert in delivering the message of Krishna in a way that take the individual conditioned entities take a step closer to Krishna.
Yeah, he's expert.
My understanding is that requires buddhi.
Yes.
And not acting from false ego.
Yes.
The kind of buddhi that springs from the quality of deep compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Is my understanding right?
Yes.
If so, could you speak a little bit on the connection between compassion and intelligence?
The connection between.
Compassion.
And the connection between those two. That's the key word. Okay. Well, there's a connect. Let's start with the connection between bhakti and buddhi. I've thought a lot about this because the terms are used interchangeably, commonly, in Prabhupada's writings, bhakti and buddhi. There's a distinction, but one who has bhakti is given buddhi, and one who is given buddhi has bhakti. So therefore, they can be used interchangeably, but. Intelligence is giving direction. It's a direction-giving, discerning capacity. And bhakti has two parts. It's service and feelings. The senses and the mind. Service and feelings. Of favorable feelings towards Krishna, that's bhakti. And then practical activity, so that's the mind and the senses, that's bhakti. So one who has bhakti, Krishna gives buddhi. Corresponding, it's not like a zero or a ten, it's corresponding, Krishna gives intelligence, that's buddhi. Specifically, how to come to him, which means how to please him. Krishna gives intelligence. And then there's an affective element, that's what compassion is. Now, compassion has three parts. Compassion is, it requires understanding another, it's the feelings for another, and it's practical activity. There's an affective and a motivational and a discerning element to compassion. So there's some overlap between buddhi, that's the discerning part, but then I want to do something. That's the motivational part. That's bhakti. But the bhakti is Krishna is to be pleased. So I have one who has compassion wants Krishna to be pleased. One who has real compassion, there's the reflection of compassion. That I'm not really thinking Krishna, I'm not really thinking the other living entity, I'm thinking I'm going to do something. And then it's making the illusion perpetrated. Yeah, mode of goodness, illusion, but illusion. So real compassion, back to what real compassion is, it's an affective element that is a derivative of bhakti and buddhi. I can understand. I have some feeling, I want to do something. So, it's an affective feature of bhakti. That's compassion.
This is from Pooja Shobha Chopra, Mataji. And she asks, what do we do to bring oneness and move from selfishness to selflessness?
Well, this how-to question again. Follow the bhakti process nicely, and gradually that attainment will be yours, or each one of us.
And this question is from Uttama Bhaktadas. And he's asking, those who are very attached to demigods, can we tell them to keep worshipping without selfish motive and the demigod will lead them to Krishna?
Not necessarily will the demigod lead them to Krishna. Not necessarily. So I wouldn't advise like that. Modify your advice, but I wouldn't advise like that. Next.
And this is from Prakash Narayan Govindan. A clear conception of who Krishna is given by Srimad Bhagavatam. The contradictions reside in him and are resolved in him.
Yeah. Contradictions are resolved within him. That's what he's saying?
Yeah, the contradictions reside in him and are resolved in him.
Yeah, both.
Yeah. And this is from Raja Ramachandran. As part of discussion on impersonalism today, as part of sadhana bhaktas, there is tendency to focus on worshipping Lord without building loving relationship with Lord's representatives. Without building loving relationship with Lord's representatives.
There is a tendency. That's what he's making a statement.
Yes, Maharaj. Okay. And further, he says, or his separated entities. Is that tendency part of impersonalism?
Yeah. But it's not like, you have to be, in this binary space where simultaneously over here I'm worshiping Krishna and serving Krishna, and then this binary space you're also, and I want to give attention to those associated with Krishna. It doesn't have to be a split binary contemplation. You might go mad if you tried to do that. But one includes the other. Prabhupada's words. This is one of my god sisters, Saradiya, asking Prabhupada, when we're chanting, should we think by chanting we're benefiting all living entities? Prabhupada's answer, you don't have the capacity to think of all living entities. Just focus on Krishna and it's included. So it's a subset. Or another question. Prabhupada, is it okay to pray to Krishna because you've taught us we shouldn't jump over the spiritual master? Is it okay to pray to Krishna? And his answer is, on the authority of the spiritual master, you pray to Krishna. So service to Krishna, we have no access to service to Krishna except through the devotees. So if the mood is the humble mood, you don't have to have a binary processor that goes in both directions at the same time. You'd explode. So it's implicit. It needs to be part of the mood. That's the mood of humility. And without the mood of humility, you can't approach Krishna anyways. So you approach Krishna's devotees and through Krishna's devotees' mercy. So I may be more or less aware, but let's just say as one evolves or progresses in bhakti, the sense of dependency upon the mercy of the devotees becomes more in the forefront. Because by the mercy of the devotees, I get access to Krishna. It's not separate. And to separate, that's impersonal. Okay? Are we done? Okay.
This is from Archana Vaidya Mataji, and she's asking, is inattentive chanting also a result of impersonalism in understanding of the tattva?
in the sense that materialism has as its foundation impersonalism, yes, but, you know, the inattentive chanting can simply be, you know, the senses and pulling the mind, I want to enjoy this and I want to get rid of that. And it, you know, materialism, if one accepts that the basis, the foundation of materialism is impersonalism, then the answer is yes. But you can, you know, analyze a little more carefully and say there's different causes besides impersonalism for inattentive chanting. The distracted mind, the repository of so many material impressions based on demands of the senses or past sensory experiences or hoping for more better sensory experiences, distractions, senses and mind. Okay, Prabhupada Ki Jai.
This is from Prakash Narayan and Govindan. And he's saying, however, in some ways, Krishna is everything as he is the source of everything.
Mm-hmm.
This makes understanding who he is clearly difficult. The simultaneous oneness part is inconceivable in itself.
Yeah, I agree. So fasten your seatbelt. Prabhupada Ki Jai.